Human beings are interesting, and the way in which we process information and we learn about things is interesting. We have a tendency to pigeonhole things, to categorize things in order to understand them. And that gives rise to what we call stereotypes. And there are certain things that we stereotype, and among those things are occupation. If I say to you that someone is a doctor or someone is a lawyer or someone is a university professor, most of you would associate that with that individual being intelligent. If I say politician or used car salesman, dishonesty comes to mind of most folks. Now, what's also interesting about this, we almost all know people who have various professions that have been stereotyped, and the people we know don't fit the stereotype. And so everyone distrusts politicians in general, but their politician, their local representative, greatest guy ever. There are certain jobs that we don't even classify as jobs. And so when we walk up to a policeman, when we walk up to a firefighter, a military personnel, we generally stick out our hand and we don't say thank you for your job. We say thank you for your service. And that's the way we associate those tasks. We associate those tasks with servitude. We view those people as servants and as good people as a result of that. And then there are the dregs of society. And if I ask people to name the dregs of society, the two that would come up most frequently are drug dealers and prostitutes. With some of these associations come respect and honor. With others, suspicion, distrust. In certain situations, with certain people, the classifications even become different. In certain segments, lawyers are not associated with intelligence. Lawyers are associated with dishonesty. In certain segments of society, police are not viewed as servants. They're viewed with great distrust as well. And so, in certain situations, these stereotypes differ, but almost universally, the dregs of society are the dregs of society. It doesn't matter where you go. Drug dealers are not viewed as being a good thing to have around. And prostitutes are not viewed as being beacons of morality. And someone that you get all that excited about is moving into the house next door. When we are introduced in our Bibles to Rahab, we are introduced with these words in Joshua chapter 2. It was a prostitute whose name was Rahab. In Joshua chapter 6 and verse 17, she once again is referred to as Rahab the prostitute. And verse 25 of that same chapter, she was Rahab the prostitute. And there are some who want to argue about what Rahab was. They insist that the Hebrew word that Joshua uses can be an innkeeper or a hostess. And to be fair, in some very specific circumstances, it can be. And also, to be fair, I'm going to cut up some slack and say that I understand why they want to say that, because the real big question would be, why would two Israelites be going into a harlot's house? And they have problems with that. But they also have problems with dealing with the Bible, because the Bible isn't finished there. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 31, she is called Rahab the prostitute. And in James chapter 2 and verse 25, she is called Rahab the prostitute. And the Greek word there can't be misunderstood. It's the word porne. It is a feminine noun. When it's translated into English, words like strumpet and harlot and a few other that are even more harsh are used. It is the same root that we get the word pornography from, where the graphy is the depiction, the graphic depiction of porne. So there's not any doubt at all that God wants us to know that Rahab was a prostitute. Five times he sees fit to tell us her occupation. In fact, he tells us her occupation more than that. But these five times her occupation is coupled with her name so that you can't miss it. And it wasn't by accident that he tells us five times. Most of the people sitting in this room are parents. All of the people sitting in this room have parents. And we know this. When our mama or our daddy tells us something, one, two, three, four, five times, it's because they want us to do what? To remember it. To know. It is placing emphasis on it. God is placing emphasis on the fact that when we meet Rahab, that's what she is. And from her occupation, most people would view her among the dregs of society. People that are unworthy of our thought. So much so that when we see someone in her profession today, we generally look the other direction, don't we? And act like we didn't even notice them. They're not worthy of our time. They're not worthy of our respect. These are the kind of people that serial killers get away with killing because no one cares enough to go looking for them. And one murder can turn into 20 or 25 or 30 before anybody goes, wait a minute, there's something amiss here. And when they finally do figure out that something's amiss, there are a few people who stand up and say, well, they deserve it. She was just a prostitute. That's the way people think about prostitutes. But we're introduced to some information about Rahab, and I want you to turn with me, if you will, to the second chapter of the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 2. And we'll read together the story of Rahab. I used to be able to tell people what page to turn to in the Bible, but my Bible don't have page numbers anymore. So, Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, go, view the land, especially Jericho. And they went and came into the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. And I want to stop there for a moment and talk about some background things. You'll remember that 40 years before this, the children of Israel had been delivered out of Egyptian bondage. They had crossed across the desert. They had come to the border of the promised land. God said, go in and take it. I've given you the land. They sent in some spies. The spies came back and said, no, we can't take them. And they refused to go in. And so that generation wandered around aimlessly in the wilderness for 40 years until they all died, saving just a couple of them, Joshua and Caleb. And we now have Joshua and Caleb leading the next generation of Israelites. God has now said to them, go in and take the land. But if you don't believe you can take it, send some spies in. And they didn't learn the lesson of 40 years before. They didn't say, God, we don't need to send spies in. We know that you've given us the land. We'll go take the land. They sent the spies in. That becomes important in just a moment as we learn about Rahab. It was told the king of Jericho, behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. And the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who've come to you, who entered your house, for they've come to search out all the land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, true, the men came into me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid on order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan, as far as the fords. And the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out. Before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and she said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land. We'll stop right there. The very first thing out of her mouth to them is, I know the Lord has given you the land. They didn't seem to know that yet. But she did. And the fear of you has fallen upon us. And that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt. What you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted. And there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you will also deal kindly with my father's house and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters and all who belong to them and deliver our lives from death. And the men said to her, our life for yours, even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. She let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterward, you may go your way. The men said to her, we will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear. And she said, according to your words, so be it. Then she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. And they departed and went into the hills and remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned. The pursuers searched all along the way and found nothing. Then the two men returned and they came down from the hills and passed over and came to Joshua, the son of Nun. And they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, truly the Lord has given all the land into our hands, and also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us. And so let's talk about what happened here. She covered for the spies. Verses 3 through 5 records that. She hid them. When the authorities came looking for them, they knew where they were at. They came to her door. They knew they had gone in there. She said, well, yeah, they came in here. But, you know, it was getting late. They were about to close the gates, and they left, and I don't have a clue where they went. But she did more than that. She actually helped them escape. When you look at verses 15 and 16, when you look at verses 22 through 23, she helped them escape. She told them what to do. She said, look, I'm going to let you down out of this window. And what you need to do is run up into the hills. You need to hide there. You need to stay there 3 days because they've went out looking for you. And the way our authorities work, they'll search and search and search for 3 days. But after 3 days, they're going to give up. They're going to come back in. And then it'll be safe for you to go. So if you'll wait, if you'll hide yourself in the hills, they won't go look up there. After 3 days, you'll be free. She gave them the method of operation of the authorities. She was committing treason against her people. because, according to verses 8 through 11, she had learned from the acts of God. They had heard what God did in Egypt. They had heard about the Red Sea. They had heard about God delivering the other kings into their hands. And she believed that God was with them, that God was caring for them, that God was providing for them, and that God would not let them lose. And she made one of the great statements of faith about the God of the Hebrews being God in heaven and on earth. And she exhibited much greater faith than Israel, who weren't too sure whether or not they could beat Jericho. And it was based on her testimony that the spies went back and told Joshua, "We can do this." They told Joshua, their hearts melt away because of us. You know where they learned that from? From her. She told them. She had more faith in God than they did. She had more confidence that God had given that city over to the Israelites than the Israelites did. You know what's interesting about it? She had never seen the works of God. She wasn't there. Those people that were outside the city that were wondering whether or not they could take the city, those people had been given firsthand accounts of the mighty works of God from their parents and from Moses. In fact, Moses had just rehearsed the mighty acts of God with them. Moses, who had witnessed those things, stood there and said, "This is what he did." And Caleb and Joshua were right there with him. Eyewitness accounts, people who could testify, "We saw it with our own eyes." This Rahab didn't have any of that. Rahab heard stories. And again, I think I mentioned this the other night. I'm reminded of Luke 16 and the question of whether or not Lazarus could be sent back from the dead, because my brothers will believe if somebody comes back from the dead and they're told they have Moses and the prophet, let them hear them. People develop faith from the story of God. That's the seed of real faith. Which is why it is so important for the people of God to tell the story of God. Talk to people about what God has done. Turn, if you will, with me to the Psalms. If you'll look with me at the 145th Psalm. Notice this great song of praise. "I will extol you, my God and King, and bless your name forever and ever. Every day I will bless you and praise your name forever and ever. Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised, and His greatness is unsearchable. One generation shall commend your works to another and shall declare your mighty acts." You see, that's my job. To sit my children down and to declare to them the works of God, to talk to them about the mighty acts of God, to tell them all that God has done to make salvation possible for man, to deliver man from death. "On the glorious splendor of your majesty and on your wondrous works I will meditate. They shall speak of the might of your awesome deeds. I will declare your greatness. They shall pour forth the fame of your abundant goodness and shall sing aloud your righteousness. The Lord is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. The Lord is good to all, and His mercy is over all that He has made. All your works shall give thanks to you, O Lord, and all your saints shall bless you. They shall speak of the glory of your kingdom and tell of your power to make known to the children of man your mighty deeds and the glorious splendor of your kingdom. If the children of God don't sound forth the works of God to make known to the people what God has done, Pray tell, who's going to do it? Your kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and your dominion endures throughout all generations. The Lord is faithful in all of His words and kind in all His works. The Lord upholds all who are falling and raises up all who are bowed down. The eyes of all look to You, and You give them their food in due season. You open Your hand. You satisfy the desire of every living thing. The Lord is righteous in all of His ways and kind in all His works. The Lord is near to all who call on Him, to all who call upon Him in truth. He fulfills the desire of those who fear Him. He also hears their cry and saves them. The Lord preserves all who love Him, but all the wicked He will destroy. My mouth will speak the praise of the Lord. Let all flesh bless His holy name forever and ever. I wonder sometimes, I wonder whether or not I have the conviction that David had to say, my mouth will speak the praise of the Lord. I will sound forth the word. People will find out about the mighty works of God and the kindness of God and the mercy of God. People will find out. When I come across someone who is suffering, who is lost, who is dying, who don't know where to turn, who don't know what to do, they will hear from me about what God has done to make it possible for them to escape. I think sometimes we find faith with other people that are not the children of God, that exceeds our own. I'm reminded of a Roman centurion who came to Jesus for a servant to be healed. Jesus said, let's go to your house. He said, I'm not worthy of you to come into my house. And he said, I understand authority, and I understand that if you say the word, my servant will be healed. And Jesus said, I have not seen such great faith in all of Israel. Sometimes it's the prostitutes and the Gentiles who believe and trust in God. Look with me at Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, verses 18 through 20. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him, and he did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how He has had mercy on you. This one had been healed, and this one says, I want to go with you. I want to stay with you. Jesus said, no. What you now need to do is go tell people what God has done for you. You need to go tell people how God has saved you. You need to go tell people what has been done. You know what? We don't have to be theologians. We don't have to be Bible scholars. We don't have to be Greek scholars. We need to be able to look across the table at someone and say, this is what Jesus did for mankind. This is what His Word has done for me, how it has changed my life, how it's changed my values. This is what I used to be, but I'm not that anymore. We have to be able to tell the story of our salvation, because that's the seed of faith. That's how men and women in this community are going to come to know what's available to them. And we learned that from Rahab, who heard the message of God and believed it. A most unlikely person to believe it, huh? You know, most of us wouldn't bother with trying to preach to a prostitute.
Remember I started off talking about the fact that we pigeonhole people? Brethren do that too. Preachers worse than anyone. We have hot prospects and we have medium prospects and we have cold prospects, and they're not worth our time or our effort because they're not really going to listen anyway, so I have to chase after this hot prospect. Well, Rahab would have been the coldest of the cold. So would Paul. He's too rabidly religious for another religion. He won't listen to me. He's not interested in hearing what I have to say. We learn that it's not our job to decide who's going to believe the story and who's not going to believe the story. It's our job to tell the story. And when the story is told, people from all walks of life, a Gentile female prostitute, came to faith. We have a little bit more of this story that we want to look at back in the book of Joshua in chapter 6. Starting about verse 15, we'll begin. And we'll read through verse 25. On the seventh day, they rose early at the dawn of day and marched around the city in the same manner seven times. Now, to bring you up to speed, this is what's going on. The armies of Israel have finally gotten emboldened enough to actually go to battle. They've been given a battle plan. For 6 days, they march around the city and then go back to camp. On the seventh day, they march around the city seven times. And at the end of the seventh time, they're to blow trumpets and they're to scream really, really loud. And that is the silliest battle plan I've ever heard. Well, maybe not. Gideon's was pretty bad too. But that's what they're going to do, and that's what they're told to do. And so it's the seventh day now. They get up early. They march around the city in the same manner seven times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city seven times. And at the seventh time, when the priest had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city, and the city and all that's within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction." And that has reference to the fact that the city had been placed under the ban. When places were particularly wicked, God said, "Look, don't keep anything from here at all. I don't want you to be sullied by the stuff that is from this place. Destroy it all. Kill everyone, man, woman, child. Burn them. Take all the stuff and burn it." The only thing that was kept was the extremely valuable metals, which could be cleansed and put into the treasury. But the people were supposed to keep no booty from this battle. "The city and all that's within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. But you keep yourselves from these things devoted to destruction, lest when you have devoted them, you take any of the devoted things and make the camp of Israel a thing for destruction and bring trouble upon it. But all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord." So the people shouted, the trumpets were blown, and as soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city. And they devoted all in the city to destruction, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys with the edge of the sword. But to the two men who had spied out the land, Joshua said, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring out from there the woman and all who belonged to her, as you swore to her." So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her. And they brought all her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel. They burned the city with fire and everything in it. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. There's a couple of things I want you to notice about this text. Rahab and her household were the only things God felt were worth redeeming in this entire city. And what's even more important than that comes at the very end of our reading. The latter half of verse 25 tells us that Rahab elected to live with the people of God. She didn't have to. She had been delivered. She had been set outside the camp. They were free to go. She was not bound by any law that the Israelites were bound to. The males in her family were not circumcised and bound under the covenant. She wasn't bound under the covenant. They were not Jews. They had no obligation under the law of Moses. She chose to stay with the people of God. She chose to be with the people of God. She chose to worship with the people of God. She chose to live like the people of God because she couldn't stay there and not do those things. There were certain festivals that even if it was Gentiles, when they were there, you had to keep them. She made a choice. I think it's kind of sad. I don't know how things work around here on a regular basis. I know how things are happening all over this country because I've talked to brethren all over the country. I've visited with brethren all over the country. I've preached to brethren from one end of the country to the other. And I know how it is in Lafayette, Louisiana. And we have 95 people Sunday morning and 45 people Sunday night. Because there's a great number of people who do not choose to be with the people of God. They choose to do something else, to be somewhere else, to be with other people. And we see in Rahab a greater desire to be around righteousness and righteous people and to be edified and strengthened by other righteous people than we see in some of the people of God. And that's a shame. But I want to turn your attention to one other passage of Scripture because we find out something extremely interesting about Rahab in the first chapter of the book of Matthew. There's a lot of people that don't know this about Rahab. I trust that y'all probably are aware of it. I know y'all have some really good teaching here. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob. Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah was not the oldest. Judah is named here because Judah is the lineage of the Christ. Judah, the father of Perez, and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez, the father of Hezron, and Hezron, the father of Ram, and Ram, the father of Amminadab, and Amminadab, the father of Nahshon, and Nahshon, the father of Salmon, and Salmon, the father of Boaz, by Rahab. And Boaz, the father of Obed, by Ruth, and Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, father of David the king. And there's a root that came up from Jesse. A branch. The Christ. She became an important instrument of God to bring the world to Christ. So she lived among the Jews and became the great-grandmother of David the king. I'm going to ask you a question. Last time you drove through Kansas City and you stopped and you saw a streetwalker, did you look at her and go, I bet her child's going to be president of the United States? No, but she went from prostitute to faith, to the mother of the royal family of Israel. A very quite unlikely journey indeed. And that is the message of the Bible. that our journey can be a most unlikely journey. That whoever we are, that wherever we come from, that whatever our background, we can come to faith. Turn with me, if you will, to Hebrews, the 11th chapter. And we're accustomed to referring to Hebrews chapter 11 as the Hall of Fame of Faith because it basically sets down a whole list of people who are great illustrations of faith. And you'll recall that when you get to the end of this chapter, there's a whole lot of them that the writer says, I don't even have time to tell you about all of the great people of faith that you can draw some assurance from that you can have faith. Because that's where he goes into this in chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, is with so great a cloud of witnesses, you need to run with endurance the race that is set before you. In verses 30 and 31 of Hebrews chapter 11 says, by faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Your past does not have to keep you from great faith any more than Rahab's past got in her way. I am certain that Bill has heard this before, and I am pretty sure that Wayne has probably heard this before. But preacher, you don't know what I've done. I'm beyond help. Over and over and over again, we learn that it doesn't matter what I used to be. It doesn't matter what I once did. It doesn't matter that Saul once persecuted the church to the point of death. It doesn't matter that he even left his city to go out and find them in other places to drag them back to have them put to death. It doesn't matter what you used to be. It doesn't matter what you used to do. It doesn't matter what you used to believe. It matters what you do today based upon what you believe today. That's the story of Christ coming into the world. That's the reason why He came. That's the reason why He lived a sinless life. That's the reason why He allowed Himself to be nailed to the cross. It's the reason why He died. It's the reason why 3 days later He arose and the temple, the tomb was empty. And the veil in that whole process, the death of Christ, the veil in the temple was rent from top to bottom so that men would know that we have access to God through Him. That's what matters, is who I am from this point on. In the book of James, chapter 2, verses 24 through 26, the very end of James chapter 2, the Scriptures say, you see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. In the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so also faith apart from works is dead. From Rahab we learn that true faith affects the way I act. What we're talking about this evening is the wonderful story of the God of heaven changing a prostitute into a bulwark of faith. And that story can be mine, and that story can be yours. We have to do the same thing that she did. We have to listen to the testimony about God and His mighty works. We have to believe that testimony and we have to act on that testimony. That's what she did. And she did it better than a whole lot of other people. God desires the salvation of all men. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9 makes it very, very clear that He desires for all men to be saved. It doesn't matter what men think about me. It doesn't matter
what their opinions about good or evil is. What matters is the change that the gospel affects in my life. Romans chapter 1 and verse 16, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Chapter 10 and verse 17 says that faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God. What matters is how that message affects me, the changes that I make in response to the message. In responding to the call of God and bearing fruit in His kingdom gets me a seat at the table. If you look very quickly with me at Luke, the 14th chapter. Luke chapter 14, verses 16 through 24. He said to him, a man once gave a great banquet and invited many. And at the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, I bought a field and I must go out to see it. Please have me excused. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen and I have to go examine them. Please have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife and therefore I cannot come. So the servant came and reported these things to his master. And the master of the house became angry and said to his servant, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city and bring in the poor and the crippled and the blind and the lame. And the servant said, sir, what you have commanded has been done, and there is still room. The master said to the servant, go out to the highways and hedges. Compel people to come in, that my house may be filled. For I tell you, none of those men who were invited shall taste my banquet. We are not serving a God who responds to us because of the value or the quality of us. That's a mistake that the Israelites made. They thought that because they were the physical descendants of Abraham, they had this thing locked up. Life was good. They couldn't lose their relationship with God. They were told God can raise up children from Abraham out of the stones of the ground. That's not what the real difference is. They became unworthy. The blind, the crippled, the lame, the prostitutes, the persecutors, who turn, who change, who become fruit producers, which is what Matthew says in Matthew 21 and verse 43, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people producing its fruit. That there is a great banquet prepared by God, and you can be an honored guest at that banquet. You can have a seat at the table. It is there for the taking. All you have to do is accept the invitation. All you have to do is clean up, wash your robes, and prepare for the feast. You do that, and everything is ready. Revelation 22, starting at verse 12. Hope it's up there on the board. Behold, I am coming soon, bringing my recompense with me to repay each one of you for what he has done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Blessed are those who wash their robes, so that they may have the right to the tree of life, and they may enter the city by the gates. That's what matters. It doesn't matter who you were, it doesn't matter what you were, it doesn't matter what you did. It matters what you will do from this day forward. It matters whether or not your heart is touched by the invitation of God. It matters whether or not the impression of the power of God to change lives has been made upon you, and whether or not you're willing to surrender yourself and say, it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me.
And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God. If you'll arise, you'll come to Christ, if you'll be washed off, being baptized into Him, your robes will be washed clean. You can enter into the city and have the reward of your master. Access to the tree of life. We can help you in connection with those things. Don't delay.